Well, hello and welcome to Heartland Hypnosis Radio. I'm your host, Ray Lytle, and I am joined by, the legendary Jim Wand. Let's welcome. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, great. How are you, Ray?
How many years have you been doing stage hypnosis?
Full-time? 32 full-time.
And you are, in all seriousness, if you guys start doing math, you know, you'll get confused. But, you're ageless. Your age doesn't matter. You still relate to college kids, even today. And for all these years, while everything changes, you know, society changes, kids change, yet you still find a way to relate to them. I think that's astonishing. And God bless you. I think it's there are so few people that can pull that off.
Well, you know, there's secrets to that. And I'm going to pull some things out of my vault here. The way I do that with the college and high schools every summer, well, up until 2 summers ago, every summer I hire a couple high school, a couple college students. During the summer, we sit down for a weekend somewhere and we find out what's trending on college and high school campuses, what kind of social media they're into, what kind of music, etc. And then each fall, I build a new show for my college circuit and then also when I get into my high schools again. So I have a whole new show built around their interests. And as long as you can do that, I find that you add value to yourself as a performer. You change your show every year, which guarantees you repeat and referral dates, and that's where the money's at.
I guess it's one way, for a performer to keep from getting dated or from making dated references. Kids relate to someone who can relate to them, and that's a great – by the way, I love your idea. Everybody should follow this. Listen to what Jim's saying. You actually will hire people to come in and just hang out so you can learn what kids are talking about.
Well, and I did that until 2 years ago. And then all of a sudden, a good friend of mine, who's also a stage hypnotist who I work with, is a college professor down in Missouri. And so now what he does for me is I put together an inventory and I send it out to him and he gives it to all the students in his classes. So now all that information I'm getting from 200 sources rather than from 2 to 4 sources. So he's actually doing the work for me, and it's more inclusive. So I don't even have to bring young people in the summer anymore, even though I do because we have fun together with brainstorming on those things. But I don't have to do that anymore because I found another way that makes it easier. And sitting down for 2 or 4 days is a lot of time where I can send this inventory out and get it back and look at it. And in 2 to 4 hours, basically dissect it and decide what to use off it.
I think it's fantastic. It's just a way, you know, so many people, we get caught up in our own worlds.
We do.
And it's just a reminder of how I'm a broadcaster. It's the same way. You get caught up in your own business. You need to be able to relate to your listeners. And when it comes to stage hypnosis, you need to relate to your audience, to your subjects. And if you're doing a lot of college shows or high school shows, you have to relate to those kids. It doesn't matter if you're 30, 40, 70, you know, it doesn't matter. You have to relate to those kids. If you don't, you're not going to be around very long. It's something that the TV guys have figured it out. But a lot of other people in entertainment, you know, they wonder why they're no longer on the hip list or the it list. It's because of a lot of things like this. You can't relate anymore to those kids.
No. And that's the same with you in your, you know, professional radio. You can tell right away. I can tell that you're a professional. You're a pro. You know how to start it, how to roll with it, you know, how to bring in the connections that you need to have brought in during your podcast or during your radio show, whatever the case might be. So you keep all that current. You keep it fast moving. And that's why you're a professional what you do. And that's the same way to any other field. And same with stage hypnotists. And you know as well as I do, it takes work, you know, to keep on that current edge.
I want to go back and to your beginnings. Let's talk about it. How did you get into what made you catch the bug? How did you get into hypnosis?
It's interesting. I was a school counselor in Illinois, and some friends of mine wanted to get more involved with hypnosis. So I'm the kind of guy that once I delve into something, I jump into it with both feet. And I did some reading on it, and I went to a couple of hypnosis shows, and all of a sudden I got the bug. So I started doing – and basically I never thought about really doing the hypnosis for entertainment. So I studied on a lot of the people back there then, like Ted Barber is big in pain management. Harry Aarons was out there. He's the one with the depth scale with hypnosis. Gil Boyne, I went out to California and worked with him for a bit. So I've worked with a lot of people who in the clinical end of it. And then when I was out in California, I was also a national trainer for the Human Development Training Institute, which has techniques that you deal in classroom counseling situations. And I had a lot of, as a school counselor, I did a lot of hands-on. I was in the classroom all the time. Anyway, when I was out there in San Diego training, I went to a show by Dr. Michael Dean, who was a stage hypnotist who was in a bar called Spanky's on the river, on the oceanfront there. And he had a lot of military come in. And I couldn't understand the first night I went to a show. There's steps leading up the stage on both sides, and the audience filled up very quickly. But the steps, people started sitting on the steps. And I couldn't figure out why until they asked for volunteers. Well, then everybody wanted to do it. And I just became absolutely enthralled with what was happening. The next week, I was still out there. So I went to Pat Collins' show, who's a hypnotist. She was on Sunset Strip. And I got hypnotized for the first time. And it was such a great feeling and everything around it. I decided, hey, you know what? I think this might be something I'd be very interested in doing. And that's how I kind of, and I guess what really pushed me over the edge, so to speak, was a friend of mine who is a college activity director in Iowa asked me if I'd come in and I'd do a hypnosis show because they'd had a bad experience with a former hypnotist who was on campus. And they wanted me to do a show. And at that point in time, I was kind of against doing hypnosis for entertainment because of a lot of the things going on in the industry. So I said, well, I've been doing a self-hypnosis seminar on your campus every year for the last 5 years. And we get about, 30, 40 students. So I thought, he's a friend of mine. I'll put together a demonstration, have entertaining components of it. And I get there that night, 800 students were there for my show.
Wow.
Well, finally it hit me. People pay to be entertained maybe more than they pay to be educated.
Yes.
So I started using that as a platform, the entertainment to get their attention. And then once I had their attention, they were listening to me. I threw in a lot of different helpful strategies, like what Rich Gezzi was talking about with his last talk with you. He's doing a lot of that in his shows now. Well, that's what I did, and I started getting people interested in the clinical part. And at that time, I still had a clinic. I had a clinic for 5 years before I got out onto the road full time. And my numbers in the clinic just went up overnight. Matter of fact, in the next 3 years after I started that, I had to train three people to come in and help me in the office. And finally, when I decided to pull the plug and go out on the road full time, I sold the clinic to them. So that's kind of the transition from my starting point in both hypnosis and then moving into the entertainment realm.
There comes a point, and helping people is great, and I know so many hypnotists want to help people, but there comes a point where the money is so good and the opportunity is so great to just get out and entertain that you have to make that decision of, okay, I've got to go out on the road full time. At the height of your career, and it might even be now, what is the most amount of gigs that you have done in a year?
Probably 400. Now, let me preface that with back early on, I did a lot of fairs and festivals where you're doing 3, 4, 5 shows a day for 10 days straight. Yeah. So, in a 10-day period, you'd be doing 40 or 50 shows sometimes. Now, I'm probably down to just under 200. I'm getting down to more of a comfortable level. But I still almost 200 a year. But, yeah, I was doing up to 400 at one time. I not too long ago, I kind of calculated out, and I'm over 11,000 shows now in every state, 14 foreign countries, cruise ships. So, yeah, I'm about 11,000 shows.
When you do that many shows, is it hard to pick favorites? I mean, do you still have a show go, God, that's one of my favorite ever? Is that still even possible when you've done 11,000 shows?
Well, I find that in every market, and I worked in all 11 markets that I can associate with. But every market, there's something that happens that makes it a favorite show. I had a show on Saturday night for a small chamber of commerce in this town that had 850 people in it. And everybody came to the show just about, and everybody snowed in on top of them. But anyway, snowed in that little town. I wanted to do something, customize my show to their particular outing that night. Well, a lot of artists do the Martian thing. So what I did was I found out ahead of time. I do a lot of research. When I go to do a performance like this, at that particular function, I went in on their website, found out as much as I could about the community. And then when I got there that night, I found out that there's a lot of people with a German ancestry, a lot of people with Swiss. So rather than doing the Martian thing, I thought, well, I'll make it a Swiss-German Martian thing, which worked out well and it backfired. And here's what happened. The first person I get up as an interpreter, I mean, the first person that got up that was a Martian, or actually the Martian-German-Swiss person, got up and started speaking in gibberish, but then the interpreter says, I don't know German. I don't know any Swiss. I said, okay. I said, no problem. I said, I happen to have a professor of German, Swiss, Martian language. Well, the next guy gets up, he's a professor, and he says, so he went and he did some words in German and some words in Swiss. He knew about 12 words. Right? So he asks this question and we got a response. And then I asked the second question. He says, I only know 12 words. So I said, okay, we got to change this up a little bit. But anyway, by the time of the end of that skit, I had 10 people on stage doing all different aspects of it. And I was having so much fun, even though maybe 20 years ago, if I tried this, I'd be falling on my butt because I had no clue where to go from here. But I found sometimes your biggest challenges on stage become some of the funniest things. And yeah. Toward the end of that show, I had another guy who was he had a huge inflated guitar, and he thought it was a balloon. I thought a balloon was a guitar, and he was playing it in a heavy metal band. And then he put it underneath his chair. And my induction with him at the end was where I had a finger draw with him, like a gun draw. And as soon as I drew my finger, his foot went down and popped the balloon. He started feeling over his entire body to see where he shot. The audience was going nuts. You know, I couldn't keep it together. So even that, a very small show in terms of people on stage, it turned out to be an extremely fun show for everybody. And it was a learning process for me.
Well, you know, like Johnny Carson was on the air forever when he was doing The Tonight Show. And, you know, even when he retired and they were playing the best of, it's always the screw-ups. You know, yes. Those parts of the show that where he screwed up, those are those most memorable things that he had done. So those are those memorable, legendary moments that we all go through. You know, I talked to Rich Guzzi. I talked to Salish. Both of them sort of come from a stand-up comedy background. Michael DeShall. I talked to Michael DeShall. I also love Michael. His background is in magic.
Right.
It's stage hypnotists come from these backgrounds. You know, from different places. You said that yours was more of a clinical. You were a guidance counselor, and you were interested in hypnosis, you know, for helping people. And then you got in it that way. What's the difference between these backgrounds that I've sort of laid out today?
Well, you know, both Rich and Salish, they have an advantage with their comedy background. Because Rich even more so than Salish, you know, having that comedy, he talks about how that gives him a much better show. And it's kind of tough to teach a person stage presence. He's doing a really good job on his end doing that, but not everybody can pick up on getting up on stage and becoming a personality. So what happens is they become more demonstrational. The advantage that I had with the counseling is I did a lot of group things in counseling. And I was always kind of a person having fun, wanting to have fun, and having fun during all my sessions. And I was kind of mischievous of sorts at times. And getting up on stage was nothing for me. And I had a lot of fun with it. And I laughed at myself. And I still do things on stage today that I laugh at myself, and people get into involved more with me because I can laugh at myself. So I would say my background, one thing with the counseling, I've learned to read people. I've learned to listen to people. I've learned to listen to what their needs are, what their wants are. And by me giving them what they want, whether it be a buyer, whether it be someone in a clinical setting, whether it be an audience, whether it be the people on stage, they all give out signals. And if you can read those signals and respond to those signals, you're going to meet their needs and as a result, meet your needs. So, yeah. So I think that part of it really helped me and the way that I can engage with whether it be the buyer on the phone, the buyer in person, the audience, the volunteers, the individual in the clinic, I can read them very easily, and that helps me a lot. And I think I got that through my counseling background.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the key is that you have to have an attachment. There's got to be something that lets you connect with your audience and your subjects. And I think you hit on the key there. For all stage hypnotists, there's got to be a connection, or it's not going to be a very memorable show.
Yeah, and even if you pick the wrong person to do a skit on stage, if you can read that person, you know what person to get to do what skit. And if you pick the wrong person, a really, really good skit could flop on you. Same way with positioning of people on stage. Sometimes I might move people 6, 8, 10 times before I get them into what I consider a flow, participant flow, where they work together rather than having people ask me, why do you tape your chairs together? Well, one, for safety, of course, but two, movement. If I have 4 or 5 people on stage who are very animated and I place them properly and they move, the chairs move, everybody moves. So pretty soon, rather than having 4 people on one part of the stage and their middle really animated, now you have the whole group animated. People who weren't capable of doing it before are now following by lead with the person right next to them or the chairs moving. So finding the right person, the right dynamics for each show, you can make every show a great show. No matter, I mean, as long as it's a great show for the buyer, it's not always going to be a great show for you as the artist. Sometimes I walk off stage and I'm sweating bullets. That was a tough show, but nobody knew it but me, you know. And so many hypnotists put themselves down because that was really a terrible show. Well, was it a terrible show for them? Was it a terrible show for the audience? Who was it a terrible show for? As long as the buyer likes it, the audience likes it, people stay, and you get paid, then it's a good show.
Yeah, then that sounds like a good evening.
Well, that's good night.
You've been, not only have you been doing stage hypnotists forever, but you have been training guys to do just this, guys and gals and anyone. What's the biggest mistake that young hypnotists make in your mind?
I think, well, there's a couple of them. Number one, I think a lot of young hypnotists, to go out and practice and make little money or no money, like if I'm going to do a show and that person only has $500 for that show for me, I won't do that show for $500, but I'll do it for them for free. If it's in a situation where I'm going to get a lot of referrals from it. I think what's happening in our industry right now is that people do not know how to create a value for them. Mm-hmm. So they start off on a very low rung of the ladder and they remain there. What I've found over the years is you can train the buyer to purchase the value that you're going to create by hiring you. Give you an idea, Gigmasters. Okay, Gigmasters is a real good social platform for new people coming in, but at the same time, it's kind of negative and you have people bidding against each other. Now, that being said, I've gotten gigs as high as $8,500 on Gigmaster, but I know exactly how to process it, how to send them the offer, how to follow up an email, when to call them, what to do to put them in an order of possibly buying me and paying more money for me. But so a lot of young artists out there, they're starting out in a way where they're making little money. And they'll probably make a little money their whole life. So if they want to do this as a weekend warrior, fine. So I'd say one of them is going out too soon without enough experience. And here's another thing, too, lack of experience. A lot of the hypnotists that I train, it's more like a retraining or a mentorship. They've gone through a training, but maybe a very short training, like a weekend training. Well, just through the weekend training in and of itself, you don't often get enough experience. You don't get any experience. But to get enough information to use to go out and actually create a good show. So by going through a session like that and then mentoring with someone who they know is a really good stage hypnotist. I take somebody out on the road with me every year for about 10 months as an internship. And then I do small mentorships so that they can learn from the bottom up. When you arrive on, let's say, for instance, when you arrive at the venue, What do you do first? Well, you talk to the buyer first. You find out what their needs are. You walk through the physical place and assess what you're going to have to do to set up, how to make it a safe show, how to make it a fun show for everyone. What kind of introduction are you going to use with this group? Every market, I use a different introduction, whether it be an introduction that I wrote and gave to them. Never let a person ad-lib your introduction, because if you get off the introduction, man, you're going down here from there. So I have an introduction that's written out. I have an introduction that's recorded if I don't have anybody there to introduce me. I have a video introduction if they have the equipment that's a real high-powered Las Vegas-type introduction. So starting out from the time you get there to how you set up your stage, your sound, your lights, how do you go into your introduction, and then your pre-talk. I have a different pre-talk for every group. I have a different set of susceptibility exercises of sorts. How do you pick volunteers? How do you pick them so you get good volunteers? There are a lot of different ways in each market. The other night, I had, let's say, with this Chamber of Commerce group, people were a little bit reluctant to get up on stage at first, so I had them actually give me the names of a few people who are really outgoing. I got a few of them up, then I got a few other people who wanted to be hypnotized, then I allowed the people on stage to pick someone of their choice. Well, 99% of the time, that person came up, and about 70% of them got hypnotized and stayed. So, and then you move into your, how do you move your people around? What kind of reinductions do you use? What kind of skits are going to be great for that particular group? And by the way, another big mistake that young hypnotists make is that they do the same show for the same client year after year. I do a lot of bookings. With my agency, we book about 700 hypnosis contracts a year. We send them out. And the biggest complaint I get is, well, I like that hypnotist, but they did the same show 2 years in a row.
Yep. So I'll tell you something, Jim. Because I've been interviewing you guys, I've done a lot of YouTube, and I've watched a lot of hypnotists. And Heartland Hypnosis Radio, you know, we will talk to a lot of people performing at Heartland Hypnosis Conference, but we try to get interviews outside of the conference time too. So I watch a lot of different hypnotists, and I'm telling you, I cannot tell you how many times I've watched a hypnotist who had a show in like 2013 and one in like 2017. And you know what? It's the same show. That baffles me that they're doing the same show.
I think 95% of the people do the same show, and part of it is that they get into a comfort zone, they get into a rut. Part of it is because, you know, it is a lot of work, and how do you get your ideas? That's why I'm doing the pre-conference training on developing killer routines. Most hypnotists have a difficult time coming up with original material, even though they don't realize the original material can start from your introduction on up. It's not just during the skits.
Well, you know what you said that I thought was brilliant, I want to reiterate this to anyone listening who does stage hypnotism. Jim said something, and being a radio guy, as I have been for many years, I cannot tell you how many times I've emceed a performance. When I am forced to ad-lib as an MC, then I'm interested in putting myself over. And I'm telling you, any radio, anybody, there's no reason to be shocked. There's no surprise, but when I was given something, and I've, you know, emceed hundreds of events, and professional bands, especially the bigger acts, they give you a written out. Here's my introduction. Stand-up comedians, the bigger ones, they give you a written out introduction. Just like Jim said, he will write it out, because you might be wanting to put yourself over, be entertaining on your own thing, worry about your station, worry about the things that you have to promote as an MC. But when you go to introduce, you turn to what's written and you say those exact words. That puts emphasis on the act. And so many people screw that up and say, oh, just introduce me. And they don't realize the mistake they're making.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why every time I do it now, I don't consider this as a radio interview. I'm interview for Heartland Radio. I guess it is of sorts. But anytime I go on the radio somewhere, I'll send the on your personality an email ahead of time on covering all the things I'd like to cover.
Absolutely.
About me.
Yes.
It makes their job a lot easier. Plus, everything is covered.
I've told William Mitchell for years, you know, I've known William for a while now, and I always tell him, I say, one of these years, I'm gonna host a presentation at Heartland to tell people how to do radio, like put it in the stage room, because you will be surprised. I think I talked a little bit about Rich with this. You know, have your bits prepared Know what you're going to talk about. And if you let the host in on, let the host know, like you said, send them a note, try to communicate with them. So it's not last second, because when you're doing a radio show, you don't have a lot of time, you know, prior to the appearance and to the performance, to communicate anything. It is important to create some kind of communication.
I really think, Ray, you should, with your skill set, and this isn't just for entertainers, but for the clinical people out there, too. When you're on that air, that time is, is worth, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, dollars. And if you don't get out your message during that time, why did you go on in the first place? And also, like you say, for the interviewer, it helps give you a guideline in terms of what direction to go in certain situations. So, yeah, I think. Actually, I think that would be a perfect, and I think a lot of people would come to it, both in the clinical track, also in the stage track, and the other tracks, too. I think that would be valuable for everybody. I'm making a note of that right now. I'm going to recommend that to you.
And clinical tracks, if you're going on, if you want to jump on the radio and convince people that you can help their listeners lose weight or stop smoking, boy, I'll tell you what, a radio interview would get it out there.
Absolutely.
But you've got to be prepared.
Yes.
Most radio hosts, I'm telling you, I am one, we're lazy. And you have to communicate and get all that stuff worked out. And, boy, any kind of radio advertising where you're jumping on and explaining why people should come to you to lose weight, people should come to you to learn to quit smoking, you've got to have it prepared. And it can't be the same bland old blah, 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 blah. It has to be something that is entertaining and informative. Teach the radio audience something, and they'll stick around, give you a lot of leeway. That's
so even though you're saying that you're lazy, I've been in a lot of radio stations, and I don't care how lazy a DJ might think, that radio personality might think they are, but all the things that you have to keep track of during the time you're on there with weather and announcements and da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, that's a difficult job. It might be easy for you now, but, man, I couldn't do it.
There's a lot of math involved.
Yeah, a lot.
You're always adding up to when the commercial's coming next.
Yeah.
It is strange, but you're right. As a guest on a radio show, to send a note over or to have some communication prior to walking in that studio, it is so important. And I think a lot of people, because a hypnosis or a hypnotist – that's, you know, you're not a, it's not your job.
No.
But I think what you're saying is, I know it's not your job, but find out about it. Find out what's going to make the other person's job easier. And that's what's going to make your appearance better.
Absolutely. And as an entertainer, if you're going to send something over, you know, put in bullet point format, and also give one or two things that are very humorous right at the beginning that the radio personality can latch on to. Because once you use that humor, that's going to kind of entice the listening audience to continue to listen throughout the rest of it. And it'll also give you more of an opportunity to share messages, just like what I did with the show at the college where I went in and had 800 students come. It was because of the entertainment part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, especially in today's day and age, radio segments are not just live. They become podcasts, and they
go on
the websites and promote all that stuff. I want to talk – you mentioned it earlier. I want to talk about your pre-conference class that you have at Heartland.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned that you're going to be working with people about changing up their material. I told you about watching the YouTube. The guy was doing the same show and, you know – The guy was doing the stage, same show, you know, in within the last 6 years, or, you know, same show twice. You talked about changing it up, writing some new bits, coming up with new material. Give me a little bit about what you're going to be doing at this pre-conference.
Well, also showing them, I keep track of every show that I do. I have a pre-show worksheet. Like, I have a sound tech that travels with me. So I put down all the cues I think I might be using. What kind of music I want to use for the introduction, what kind of music I want to use to get volunteers on stage, which is, you want to use a lot of different, like the other night, I used Luke Bryan, Kick the Dust Up, because that's what we wanted to get him to do, to come up on stage. That was kind of a country group. So I use a lot of different music, but I have this pre-show worksheet that I give them. Now, it's not that I follow that exactly, because more often than not, I go off it, but I have about 500 to 800 music, different sound bits, but he knows where to go because he's been with me, you know, for the last 8 months. But so I have a pre-show checklist, but then afterwards I have a post-show. Afterwards, I write down how many people were there, how many people I had up on stage, what kind of subjects were they, what skits did I actually do. So then I have a skit list. If you look at some of my colleges, and I have colleges that I've done 25, 26, 27, 28 consecutive years, I have a skit list all the way back to when I first started with them. So I know exactly what I did the year before and the year before that. And that's a big thing with the, we were talking a little bit earlier about hypnotists doing the same show over and over. Even at the after prom and Project Grad, more and more of the schools are letting their juniors and seniors or sophomore juniors and seniors come to it. So even though they're saying, well, there's a new audience this year, well, half of them might not be new. Yeah. Plus the same parents might be there.
Yes, it might be the kid's second prom, and the right. Yeah, it might be the chaperone, might be their fourth kid.
Absolutely, oh yeah, that happens.
Yeah, and I think there's a problem. It's not just it's stand up comedy too, with people not change. Now listen, I don't want young hypnotists who are listening to this be freaking out thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna have to change my show every week. No, that's not what Jim's talking about. He's talking about adding some variety. And by the way, when you have everybody's got that one bit that is a killer bit. We're not saying don't do that bit, you know, get your killer bit. You can do that every show, but you have to change it up, right? I mean, it's right. At least once a year.
That's right. And learn how to make every bit a killer bit. Yeah. You can do that. If you add components, you add layering to it. Each skit I do, like a lot of hypnotists I've seen, they'll do 25, 30 skits during a show. Well, I might do 4 or 5 skits during a show, but the skit might be I have one called Nectar of the Gods right now that I'm using that has 9 different layers to it.
Oh, wow.
So each layer might take a minute to 2 minutes. You get laughs from every layer. You extend the skit, but it's like a storyline. And once you get into that storyline, it gets very comfortable. Then I have something called sandwiching. So let's say you have a component, a new component that you want to use, and you're not sure how it's going to go, or you have a new skit. What I do is I play a skit that always kills. And then I put in the new skit, and then I follow it up with another skit that always kills. That way, if the one in the middle falls a little bit flat, you've already had a real positive upbeat before that, and now you have another big swing positive upbeat after that. So there's a lot of things that I show them how you can go and take a skit you're presently using and retool it, add components to it, make it longer, make it shorter. It depends. You can't do the same skit the same way for every crowd. So read your crowd and decide what's going to work best with that crowd, with that skit. So I might have a skit that goes 15 minutes long. And then the next time I use the same skit, I might only do it for 6 or 7 minutes because of the response I'm getting from the people on stage and the reaction I'm getting from the audience. I know it's time to move on. You don't want to beat a dead horse. And I've seen some hypnotists who do a skit that's really, really animated and it falls flat. They followed up with another skit that's really, really animated. Well, there's no way. You're going to get animation off the second skit if you didn't get it off the first skit. So you have to learn how to build the momentum and how to utilize the right skits and how to utilize the right configuration of the skits. And that's a lot of what I'm going to be talking about, too. Granted, by the end of my pre-conference program on developing routines that kill, at the end of that, we're going to develop at least 4 or 5 new routines that each person can take back and call their own.
So you can basically write your show for 2019 by coming to Jim Watt's pre-conference workshop.
That's my goal, is to be able to get them to do that.
I think it's fantastic. It is. I think that's a big problem. A lot of guys are hanging back on old material when it's not that hard to write new material or retool existing material or, you know, however you want to put it. Just freshening it up is something that needs to happen for a person to get as big as a Jim Wand or as big as a Rich Guzzi or a Salish or any of these guys that I've talked to. And I'm saying this for young, or I shouldn't say young because some people get into it older, but for newer stage hypnotists, I hope that you guys are taking this stuff to heart.
And it doesn't make any difference how old you are. I have a 57-year-old chiropractor that's coming to a fair training this summer because he wants to become confident in street hypnosis and how to do it demonstrationally that way. He's 57 years old, and he's just beginning his real career with hypnosis.
Who are the good ones out there now, Jim?
Who are the good what?
Who are the good stage hypnotists? I don't know how much you get to, because you're working so much. I don't know how many guys you get to see, but who's out there right now that's doing some good fresh stuff?
Well, you know, I'm gonna say good hypnotists, because mm-hmm. I've seen even a lot of the good hypnotists aren't doing new material. They're keeping it the same. They're right. not changing it a lot. But with that in mind, I haven't seen a lot of their full show, so I can't really say mm-hmm. you know they're not using fresh material. But let's say, for instance, the college hypnotists out there. You know, you got Chris Jones. You got Salish. You got a number of different people on the college market that are out there all the time. And you see them and you crisscross paths with them. Then you have your corporate hypnotist. You know, Anthony Connelly, a lot of people know of him, but he's back in the 80s. He did a lot of motivational talks that ended with a hypnosis demonstration that tied in. I actually used to do a lot of that before I got into as much stage as I'm doing today, where I had time to do it. So, every market's got some good stuff. Oh, Rich, he's king of the comedy clubs. And I talked to Rich a long time ago when he's passing through Dubuque, Iowa, on his way to California to do his thing out there, which he told us, didn't quite work because of his audition and so forth. You know, he's got the comedy rooms, comedy clubs. I used to own a couple comedy clubs. I used to do a lot of comedy club shows myself. And I know that that's a whole different audience than it is going to a college or a high school or a corporate gig or a cruise ship or a fair festival. All of those are different. So there are a lot of good hypnotists out there, but the ones that you remember are the ones that leave an impact on you.
Yeah.
So that's what I look at.
You know, for corporate gigs, and I know that a lot of times when people do corporate gigs, they sign non-disclosures and so on and so forth. But there has got to be sales staffs that corporations will hire a really good hypnotist to come give a talk to their sales staff. I mean, some of that's got to be going on.
I'm
sure there's non-disclosure agreements that have to be signed, but this is something that, you know, they need to find someone. I don't know. They don't know how to get hold of them, but you would think that the person they would find would probably be a stage hypnotist, right?
And a lot of the corporate leads I get for sales meetings, especially, come from people who have seen me, whether they've seen me on a cruise ship, whether they've seen me at another corporate function, whether they've seen me at a fair. Well, I'll give you an idea. 28 years ago, I was doing a fair in Dubuque, Iowa, and a guy approached me afterwards, and he says, how'd you like to come to Saudi Arabia and work?
Oh, my God, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, he was director of medical services for Saudi Aramco Oil. And they had four different gated communities in Saudi Arabia that he was over. So for five continuous summers, I went over there for 2 weeks every summer and worked just within those installations.
Wow.
That's just from somebody seeing me at a fair.
Yeah, I would think if I have a company and we have products, if I'm a pharmaceutical company, whatever, and we're selling something, that I would, if I thought that hypnosis would help my sales staff overcome certain things that are preventing them from selling what I know is a good product and blah, 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 I would hire a hypnotist like that to come and talk.
Yeah, and even if you don't mention the word hypnosis, but mm-hmm. you use a personal motivation on how to get into the subconscious mind. Also, when I do corporate events, you know, I bring in some NLP techniques, how to read body language,
right,
how to read eye movements, which customers you can stand close to, which ones you better not stand close to, which ones you need visual imagery with, which ones you can't, what kind of tonation you use in your voice to close this. Well, all of those things, you know, they're part of hypnosis, the conversational hypnosis. So I probably do... I probably do 10 or 15 corporate events every year that are more on the sales end of it.
And you know, you mentioned Anthony earlier. Wow. I mean, I can't imagine. I certainly don't know what he charges, but I can't imagine it's cheap.
You know, it's not. I went through his training. It's not that expensive. When you go to a group thing, it's like $5,000. That's mm-hmm. what he was charging. And everybody's going to get something out of it, whether you stage hypnosis. But his big thing, of course, is the corporate end of it. And bottom line, right, there's a lot more money in corporate.
Yeah.
They're willing to pay it. I mean, they're not going to blink an eye at paying $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to bring in someone who can give, not only talk about motivation, but give their employees a skill set that they can utilize.
Yeah.
And completing the sales, also having more confidence in their abilities, learning what they need about the vehicles, learning how to approach the customers, all of those things, you know, they don't think twice. They don't bat an eye at that kind of money.
Well, it might be $150,000, $200,000 difference for this company.
Absolutely.
So you're right. $10,000 is nothing.
No. And guess what? You do one of their dealerships, and so many now are multiple dealerships. So mm-hmm. now I have one in Wisconsin that takes me from dealership to dealership.
Yeah.
Because I've worked so well with one of them. Now I'm in five more.
And that's, boy, I'll tell you, and anyone listening, you've got to take stuff like that under consideration. It is helping salespeople overcome those blockages that they don't even know they have.
Absolutely.
And making them higher producers. Boy, that's huge money to the company, whether it's auto sales, media sales, pharmaceuticals, whatever it is. If they have a sales staff that is out there selling their products to help them overcome the boundaries that they have or whatever blockages that they have in their mind, boy, that makes you very valuable to these companies.
And once you get started in one area, they just keep expanding. Yeah. You know, I kind of got off the track with you there. You know, what I'm going to do for my program pre-conference, I'm going to show them how to use things like national holidays, international holidays. The 8th of March was International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Well, you got to be kind of careful with, and as Sanders was talking about this the other night in his interview, when he did conduct an interview, in terms of what is critically correct, politically correct.
Yeah. And times are changing. Yeah.
That's right. At one time, you know, I make guys, gals, and beauty pageant. Well, you got to be careful with that now. So rather than do that, being that it was International Women's Day, something I'm going to do with a couple colleges I got coming up. Adriana Grande just had, she was the first gal since the Beatles to have three consecutive 1, 2, and 3 hits on the top 100. Anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have all the guys and all the girls on stage become her and kind of show what the difference is between how gals perceive her and how guys perceive her and do a regular skit around that with one of her songs.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
You can't do it with high school because of the language in it, but the college, you can't get away with it. So I'm going to do something with that. A couple of years ago, I did something with Orange is the New Black for both college and for corporate. Because mostly Orange is the New Black, they're all female participants. So the guys can take on the identity of a female, and it's not quite the same as if you make them a girl in another context. One thing I just started using, a lot of hypnotists have trouble when people open up their eyes, they bring them out of it comes out of hypnosis. Especially if you have a group on the same level with the audience where there's no stage, and they're looking right in their coworkers' eyes, it brings them out of hypnosis. I did something over Christmas. Bird Box came out with Sandra Bullock. I don't know if you've seen that movie or not.
Yeah, with the blindfold.
Yeah, with the blindfold. Well, if they open up their eyes, took the blindfold off, they become serial killers and they kill themselves, right?
Yes, yes.
So what I told the people on stage was it was a really small group, one of the smallest ones I've done in a long time, 35, and they were from construction. So they're in a construction company, 35 of them. Now, first of all, after I did my pre-talk, I got 14 of them on stage, which, you know, I was just shaking my head. Fantastic, rah-rah, Jim. But I knew that if they started opening up their eyes, it would break their concentration because we're only about 8 feet from their eyes to the people in the audience, only about 8 feet away from the front row. So what I did was I asked how many people in the audience had seen Bird Box. Well, about a third of them had seen it. Well, for those of you who had not seen Bird Box, the thing with Bird Box was if you open up your eyes and took a blindfold off, you would either kill somebody or you'd kill yourself. So what we're going to do is a Bird Box challenge. So for this next kit, nobody's going to open up their eyes. But being that you're not going to open up your eyes, we need to see something else. We need to see a physical, emotional reaction. So what I like to do is I like to have each one of you right now with your eyes closed, make the most unique facial expression, body gesture that you can think of. So they all really wound up and it got a big laugh out of the audience and kept them hypnotized. So I did not, for that show, I did not have them open up their eyes until three quarters of the way through the show. By that point in time, I out of the 14, I kept 12 of them. All right. And by the time I had them open up their eyes, all 12 of them were extremely animated. But if I had them open up their eyes earlier, I probably would have lost three-fourths of them just from seeing the people in the audience.
Wow.
So that was just something, and it kind of tied in with the current movie.
Yeah.
Holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, I just had a bunch of guys do a turkey trot dance during Thanksgiving, and I brought the house down. One thing you got to stay away from right now is politics.
Yeah.
I use politics in my hypnosis shows all the time. You can't right now just because of what's happening in the political world. So you got to kind of stay away from that so you don't have a big fight.
Yeah, because it's and research will show this. Unlike any other time in American history, politics, people are so passionate about whatever it is they feel that it is something, and I'm telling you, just I've learned this from radio, you know, choosing a side and sticking with it, you know, it will force people who disagree to just turn it off. And that's never been the case before. And the same thing with stage entertainment. People are so passionate. That's crazy. It is really crazy. You're going to be doing your regular presentation as well. Not only do you have your pre-conference workshop, which I recommend seriously, anybody coming to Heartland, which is April 26th or 28th, anybody coming to Heartland Hypnosis Conference, if you are a stage hypnotist, you are crazy if you don't take the Jim Wan pre-conference, because it is it's on the 25th. It's an inexpensive workshop, and you're going to leave with a new act because, you know, we talked about that. That's a pretty special thing. But if you go to the concert, if you're going to the conference, be flexible, think outside the box, thrive in an ever changing marketplace. You're going to be doing a regular presentation on that, on Friday in the stage room, which will be fun as well.
Well, and the reason I did the, pre-conference, I did it at night because there are a lot of really good sessions going on in the daytime. So I didn't want people to be in conflict in terms of which one to use, because the presenters through the other pre-conference programs are really good. So I'm going to do mine from about 6 to 10 at night to give those people an opportunity to come to that. But in terms of thinking outside the box, that's going to be basically, again, for people in the stage realm. But people who are not in the stage realm, they're still going to get some helpful information from it if they decide to come to it. And you got to always thinking out of the box, what can you do different? I always try to use a story to pull people into things like that. When I do a radio interview, for instance, I send them something, ask me about the Wisconsin sheep fiasco. And of course, well, just itself, the Wisconsin sheep fiasco. What is that? Well, do you have time for me to tell you about that quicker?
By all means, go. Oh, I'm fascinated. Go ahead.
Well, this happened about 25 years ago. I'm a former FFA member. I'm also a lifetime member of the FFA alumni. As a matter of fact, every year I do three shows at the National FFA Convention, which is used to be Future Farmers of America, but now it's an acronym because they're trying to get more of the urban dwellers into it too. But anyway, I do three shows. This year we sold 9,600 tickets.
Wow.
The association about $140,000 besides what they paid me. And I've been doing that for 22 consecutive years. And that's, again, value you bring to it. It helps you make more money, helps them make more money. But anyway, I was doing a state FFA convention. And before every show, I walk up and I ask the person who hired me, is there anything special they'd like to have me do? Because I like to do a lot of ad-lib stuff and just throw it in, see what happens, what sticks to the wall and what doesn't. But anyway, the advisor said, can you do something with sheep? Because a lot of the people in FFA in that area were also raised sheep. I thought, okay, what are you going to do? Well, what I did was, you have to kind of visualize this. The stage was not extremely wide, but it was very deep. So my configuration for people sitting on stage was like in a U. There was a line of chairs across the back of about 15, and on each side, pointing out to the audience, there's another 7. Well, anyway, what I did was I had all the guys become purebred show sheep, and they all got down on all fours. Well, the two lines of guys facing each other, there was an advisor, because not only did students get hypnotized, but also their teachers or ag advisors got hypnotized. Anyway, I had two guys facing each other, and they're pretty good-sized lads. They also knew each other, and they're very competitive. Well, they looked at each other, bam, bam, and they rammed each other right in the middle of the stage. You could hear it all the way to the back of the auditorium, and they collapsed. I thought, oh, no, we're going to have to call the ambulance. But all of a sudden, they both jumped up, they started shaking their heads, and they took off out in the audience, these sheep. Oh. Well, if you know anything about sheep, the other guys were told about probably 14 on stage. They were sheep, too. They took off after them. So I had about 16 sheep running around this audience on all fours. All, you know, bedlam broke out. I didn't know how I was going to get back up on stage. Everybody in the audience was having a great time. There were about 1,500 people in the audience. So I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? They got out of the box. So I had all the gals on stage become sheep herders. And they went out.
That's great.
And they brought them back up on stage. So learn how to think on your feet. And some of the biggest things that happen, there's stories you can use for decades. And there are things you can pull in. Like now I do a prize bull competition. If I have a lot of farmers there that raise cattle, and I had an issue the other night where they were on the same level as there's no stage, so there are people sitting on stage with the eye level of the people in the audience, and I knew if I got all the guys down on all fours to become prize bulls, nobody in the audience could see it. So I came up with an idea. I had them all become hybrid prize bulls that walked on their back feet. So then they all stood up, and I had their trainers come out, and it worked out really well. But I just changed it to fit the demographics,
right,
of the people, but the configuration stage. So,
I want to say this while interviewing you, because I know people are going to see your name, and they'll definitely tune in because it's Jim Wan. I got to say, what stage hypnotists do, and don't get me wrong, I'm fascinated by all different types of hypnotists, and on this show, I interview everybody. Sure. But when it comes to stage hypnotists, what you guys do is so important, and so, especially in times like now, there's too much sadness. All of us could find, we all have some tragedy involved with this. And a good stage hypnotist, whether it's in a comedy club, whether it's at a school, whether it's a corporate event, a fair, an after prom, whatever it is, it's so magical because we get to go and escape.
Yes.
And be entertained. So it's so important what you guys do. And, you know, hearing these stories, I'm hearing from you, which are great. And the ones I heard from Rich and Salish,
yes,
and so many other people. It is, I want everybody that's listening to this to know just how important you guys are. And how special you should feel, because you are taking us away from sadness and tragedy that people deal with. So God bless all of you, and God bless you, Jim Wan. It is the last hour has been a very fun, sir.
You know, and the way you put everything together, I really appreciate your style. I love it. I'm happy I was able to come on. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to you. You'll be down in St. Louis, right?
I am planning on going. It's also my anniversary. Every year William does this on my anniversary. So it involves me requesting or talking my wife into it. But I would love to go down and meet so many of the people I've talked to.
You bring your wife down. I hypnotize her. Give us great suggestions. Your greatest anniversary night ever.
There you go.
Send me checks at Christmas.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me, Mr. Jim Wan on Heartland Hypnosis Radio. Sir, it has been my joy to have you on the show today.
My pleasure to be on it as well.
You guys, I'll be back with another episode soon. Thank you so much. And remember, heartlandhypnosisconference.com. Register for the conference. It's so worth it. And attend Jim Wan's pre-conference. You're basically going to create your new show for 2019 just
Absolutely.
By going to this pre-conference.
Yeah.
It'll pay for itself. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.